If you've got bats in your belfry and a family of raccoons living in your attic, who you gonna call? No, not Ghostbusters. Patrick Gibson. Patrick is a wildlife removal expert who's seen it all when it comes to uninvited animal visitors in your home. Over the past decade, he's served more than 4,000 clients, including property managers, homeowners, and businesses such as Walmart, Home Depot, and even the Southwest Florida International Airport. We've got him right here in the studio now to tell us all about it on the Royal Palmcast, starting right now.
You're listening to the Royal Palmcast, the show about all things real estate. From the production studios of the Royal Palm Coast Realtor Association in Fort Myers, Florida, here's your host, Jim Sandville.
Welcome to the Royal Palmcast. I am indeed your host, Jim Sandville, coming to you from the studios of the Royal Palm Coast Realtor Association in beautiful, sunny Fort Myers, Florida. I'm here today, as usual, with Jerry Johnson. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, Jimmy. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. Good. Anything new with you? Anything exciting?
Oh, we got a really cool guest today.
We
talking
do.
Talking about some cool stuff.
We do. We do.
I'm always anxious to kind of spill the beans.
Don't do that.
I'm going to keep the beans unspilled.
But if the people who are listening to this have already seen the show title, so beans have been spilled. But we'll get into that
more
in just a second.
More beans to come.
But I just want to make sure you're okay.
Because I'm doing good.
When you're having a good day, the show goes really well. Otherwise,
you always sound so worried about me. I appreciate your concern.
I'm a carer, Jerry.
You are.
I care.
You are.
I am a carer.
Very giving gentleman.
All right. We do have, by the way, I want to let you know, in case you're new to the program, that this is a show about real estate. We talk about things, and we talk to people that realtors care about, homeowners, home sellers. If you live in a home, you're going to want to listen to today's show, because this is good stuff. And I can't remember, and you tell me if you feel the same way, Jerry, can't remember looking forward to a show more than this one.
This is, I'm pretty geared up. I know there's some really interesting anecdotes to come.
We are about to hear them.
We are.
So let me tell you who we have in the studio today. Our guest today is Patrick Gibson. He is the owner of Professional Wildlife Removal in the Fort Myers, Cape Coral area. Now, Patrick serves all of Southwest Florida, removing and relocating unwanted critters from homes and businesses throughout the area. He's served more than 4,000 clients, including homeowners, all major property management companies, and businesses such as Walmart, Home Depot, Southwest Florida International Airport, and many, many real estate agencies from Naples to Port Charlotte. Welcome to the Royal Palmcast, Patrick.
Thank you very much.
Welcome.
Glad to be here.
We are more than thrilled to have you, because if anybody's a storyteller, I know you've got some good ones.
Got some good ones.
We're going to get into it. Why don't we just jump right in? Tell me a little bit about your background. Where are you from, and how'd you happen to get into the business of wildlife removal?
Okay, good questions. I grew up in northeastern Pennsylvania, Pocono area, and decided from a very young age I did not like cold weather, which seems odd growing up in that, but just wasn't a big fan. So I knew very young I was moving to somewhere warm. I didn't know where, so I knew that was going to happen.
You hopped in the car and headed south, huh?
Almost. So I first decided, well, where can I go where it'd be amazingly warm and completely different from where I live? And I applied to the University of Hawaii, got in, and decided, okay, this is where I want to go. So I did my first 2 years there. Traveled around a little bit, came to Florida, and finished up at UCF. I went to Valencia College first when I got here, and then UCF.
Where's Valencia? Is that
Orlando?
Orlando.
Yeah, okay. That's Orlando. And then down to, got my degrees up there, and then headed down here and was starting a doctorate program at FGCU, and decided that wasn't, I just... maybe was getting a little too schooled out. Wasn't sure if that was really the best direction. I decided to start this just to see if this, I wanted to be out in the field a little bit more. And lo and behold.
Wow, one more degree.
Just took off.
We'd have been calling you Dr. Gibson.
That's right.
Wow.
That's right.
That was pretty close. So what about the Fort Myers, Cape Coral area interested you the most? Why this area?
We had relatives down here. My wife's family had lived down this way, and we were pretty split. You know, did we want to, you know, from the Orlando area, do we want to go to St. Augustine area, or did we want to head this way? And as always in marriages, wife usually gets the final say in things on a 50-50.
Yeah.
So we found ourselves here, and we haven't regretted it.
No regrets.
It's been fantastic.
Yeah, it's a great place to live and bring up a family. You have children?
I do. Two young girls. I've got a 13-year-old who's getting ready to finish up 8th grade and become a high schooler next year, which sounds very scary when I say it to myself.
Ooh, don't tell Jerry that. He's got one in high school.
Yeah. And then I do have a high schooler who's just wrapping up her sophomore year and starting her junior year and getting ready to start putting her college applications out and getting geared up that direction.
Very nice. Very nice.
Fun stuff.
Yeah. So how did you happen to get into the wildlife removal business?
Well, that's actually a very long story. I'm not sure we've got enough time for that one.
I'll give you the hook when we're done.
Okay. So, knew that I enjoyed, again, biology, which is my field. Wasn't the biggest fan of research, so I knew I wanted something that was field-based, still could incorporate, you know, a lot of what I had learned in school. But decided I didn't want to stay on that, you know, the research / teaching path. And I just really pondered it. And I thought, okay, well, what can I do with this if I'm not completely happy with the direction I'm going? And decided that, you know, let me look into something with animals. I don't know what something. It was just something that I enjoy most out of biology, which is a very broad field. Covers a lot of area. Stumbled upon a company that was doing this, caught my attention. I called them, just asking questions. They answered some stuff for me. They didn't seem like they had any idea what they were doing or talking about when I would ask basic things, but they were willing to answer things. And I thought, oh, okay, well, that's interesting. Maybe I should look into this a little bit more. This might be something that catches my eye. And I did. And so I pretty much started this in a slightly different form and kind of just figured out everything as I went because I didn't have any previous experience with it. I didn't work for a company that did anything like this.
Huh. And when was this? What year?
This would have been 2010.
Ah, okay.
And so, yeah. And then from there, I was able to kind of develop skills, you know, again, using a lot of the background I had, which gave me a big advantage, I felt like. I knew animal behavior for right. lots of animals. I knew lots of things that people that were doing this didn't know.
Yeah.
So then I was able to continue to refine skills and continue to get my name out there. You know, I felt like I was fortunate. I've always gone into it trying to do the best job possible. I remember at first I didn't have any idea what to charge for anything that I did. I kind of knew what I was doing, kind of didn't. And I kind of just felt my way through. And a little shaky there at first, wasn't really making any money, but I was getting lots of good experience and I was making lots of mistakes, which is usually our best teacher. You know, I feel fortunate it didn't go super smooth at first because that's, I think, where I made the biggest strides with trying to figure things out. And I think that's where my background comes in better than most, in that if I had worked for a company, you know, just say I was a high school kid, just working for a company, whatever I learn from that place, that's what you're gonna apply.
Right.
Now, whereas I didn't have any of that, I had to figure it out, and I was able to hit things from multiple directions. Okay, so instead of this seems like the traditional, like anybody can go online and, you know, figure out how to trap a raccoon, a possum. But I could see it from a lot of different angles in that not everybody's always successful with these things, so I can try lots of different things. So the background of science, you know, and the scientific method and testing gave me supreme advantage. So, and it's still holds to this day. I mean, I've got techniques that work amazingly well, but I'm always willing to try new things.
Very cool.
Because if it beats what I was previously doing, that's the new thing.
Yeah, we'll jump into that in just a second. Yeah. But I know from talking to you pre-show that you like to, your business model is fairly simple.
Yes.
Describe your services. What do you do exactly? What do you offer?
The services generally start with somebody at their home hearing a noise. Okay, that's the primary thing, or possibly smelling something dead or seeing flies. Okay, and then they know something happened or something weird going on. But the noise is usually the starting point, and it's usually a noise at night. The bulk of the animals here are nocturnal. You know, handful aren't. Birds, squirrels are diurnal. You know, they're going to do their things during the day. But, and people don't really people are usually working during the day. So even if there were day noises, nobody's really paying attention to that. But at night, everything's quiet. Mm. It's 2 a.m. and something's waking you up out of a sleep with a thumping sound or with scratching or with sounds like things are just moving all over the place above you. That's enough to freak people out.
Mm-hmm.
Heart rate starts going. The blood pressure goes up and they're freaking out and they're thinking, now what do I do? Who do you call at 2 a.m?
Mm-hmm.
Actually, by the way, you don't call me at 2 a.m. No, nobody's doing work.
I rarely do.
Me either.
But my phone, the phone service is always on. A message can always be left, and I usually get back to people, 6 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
But anyway, but that usually starts things off. And the next usual thing is, again, people don't have background in what they're hearing. They know something's up there. And you get attic amplifications, okay? So when you have something big like a raccoon thumping, okay, that's going to sound like a person moving.
What are they doing when they're thumping? Scratching themselves or something?
They're moving around.
Oh, just moving.
It's a bigger animal. Our raccoons down here, average sizes, male to female is going to differ a little bit, based on the sex. 20 to 25 pounds what you're looking at here.
Wow.
Which is small compared to up north.
Really?
Okay, so anything we have down here of a similar species, a raccoon, bear, deer, if you follow Bergman's rule, which is a fantastic rule, is that anything in colder climates of the same species versus a warm climate is always going to be much larger up north. Mm. Got to have the body fat. You got to have more fur. You got to be able to survive the cold. Down here, that's not efficient,
mm-hmm.
and that's just not how the reproduction works. The more efficient guys are the ones that reproduce are always going to be the smaller, lighter,
Darwinian.
Thinner. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So that's the survival of the fittest right there. So that's how it works. So that's the size of our guys. So back to the noise in the attic. So you have a 20-pound raccoon, say, for example, moving around. That's going to sound like a person. Again, you don't have a whole lot of things in your attic to block sound. It reverberates through there really well, so it sounds really big compared to what it actually is.
And they can see at night, right?
They can see just fine.
Really?
Yeah, no issues at all. Yes.
Okay.
So the person, from their perspective, is, what I run into a lot is if we have single ladies, okay, at a home, at a condo, they feel like that's a person. And it's a burglar. Uh-huh. And their first phone call is to the police.
Right.
Okay. And the police are used to that type of phone call. They still have to come out and check it. And usually one of the first things they're looking for are the soffits on the house. And they'll run the flashlight around the house and they'll look for any opening, which they almost always find. And they let the person know it's clearly not a person, it's an animal. And I get referred a lot, by places like by sheriff's department and police departments. The amplification is usually what scares people, okay? So then we go downgrade that to a smaller animal. Say it's a rodent, for example. That, to most people, again, having heard these things, and especially when the house is dead silent, middle of the night, the rodent's going to sound like a raccoon. So whatever it is always going to sound way, way bigger than it actually is.
Huh.
Sometimes people know what those sound. They've had it before. They've heard it. Like, rodents make a very specific scratching noise when they're in the attic. It's a common thing. It's a biological function for them. Rodents' teeth and nails, and rodents do include squirrels, by the way. Most people don't realize that, but squirrel is just a cute-looking rodent. rats are not so cute-looking rodent. But anyway, their teeth and nails on those guys don't stop growing. They're always growing. So they scratch and they chew to file things down. So it's just a common function for these guys. But when people hear that, they start getting pretty nervous. And again, a lot of times if they don't have experience with it, now they're up the rest of the night. If this started at midnight, they're literally up all night staring at their vents, expecting something to burst out of a vent at any time. So there's no chance they're going back to sleep. So they're really tired. They're really upset. They're really ready to take care of the issue. So that's usually how the phone calls start, is usually going to be with a noise like that. And I'd say a percentage of the time it's, my gosh, we just walked into the house and it just smells like death in here. Something clearly died and it's obviously coming from the attic. Can you figure out what's going on? So in cases like the latter, we'll go out and you still have to start at the starting point of anything. You have to inspect a house. There's situations where the animal activity is outside and it sounds inside, but it isn't. Attics aren't uniformly sized all the way through. As you get to the end of any house, on any of the directions you go, your attic size gets smaller and smaller. Less distance between your ceiling that you're looking up at and the roof. So on occasion, we actually have guys that are on the roof making a lot of noise at the end, but it sounds like it's just above you. And it technically is, but it's on the roof. It's never breached. So these are the things we need to figure out. Do we have an actual breach? Do we have a situation where we have some wind and we have a lot of tree branches or palm fronds dragging the house, and it sounds like nails scratching? Mm-hmm. You know, that happens.
Things that go bump in the night.
Things go bump, and you know, your first thought is it's something, you know, bad, and it just needs to be investigated. So that starts the inspection. So back to the dead animal scenario.
And by the way, it's always the attic, right?
I mean, that's always the attic. It's always the attic. A couple exceptions. We do some manufactured homes. We have some of those in North Fort Myers. We have nice manufactured homes, nothing crappy. And they won't have issues like that. They don't really have attics per se, but they have crawl spaces underneath where they run their pipes and all that. It just works from the bottom. So the only situation there. But other than that, it's almost exclusively attics. A big note for people is that when you have an animal coming into an attic, it really has no interest in coming into the living space. Okay?
Really?
That's the first thought people have. It's, is it going to smell something good in my kitchen and is going to break in? Is no interest in that at all. Whoever's breaking into the attic, and we'll go over a couple exceptions, is looking to reproduce. It's going to be a female. And it's going to be a female raccoon, for example, female rodent, female possum. And that's a safe place to reproduce. And it's safe because there's no predators in that attic.
They got to get their partner in there, though, huh?
So that's already happened.
Oh.
It's already happened. A lot of these animals are polygamous. Yeah. Okay, so they'll be impregnated. Male's job in a lot of cases for a lot of these species is to impregnate as many females as possible. Okay. Very few mating pairs, you know, with a lot of species. Some exceptions, but it's mostly polygamy. That's what keeps the species going in a lot of these cases. So her job at that point is, how do I protect the offspring? Okay. So if she's, and she can have her offspring anywhere. She could have them in palm trees. She can have them in thick brush. But when she leaves to go do something, to go get a resource, food, water, maybe start scoping for a better shelter, her offspring are getting left behind in some cases, and we'll go over exceptions to that. And they'll make noise. They're hungry. They're going to make noise. They want mom. And that noise is what brings the predators in, the snakes, the birds of prey.
Ooh.
In the case of raccoons, you can have a male raccoon finding juvenile raccoons, and you'll have a situation of infanticide where they will kill the raccoons so that that female goes back into heat so that he has a chance to reproduce with her.
Really?
So we have all kinds of situations where the female's offspring are not safe. If she gets into that attic, she's all but guaranteed at being safe. Nobody's going to hear juveniles making noise in an attic, and therefore they go through a lot of trouble to get into these spaces.
Interesting.
So that's how that part happened.
Well, she didn't hear about Patrick. She'd be trembling.
Exactly.
Are raccoons like the main culprit in these removals you do?
I would say rats are the most prolific.
Rats.
And we're going to go over why. There's a very big reason for that. We'll go over that. Back to my other example of, okay, so that would be live animal. Dead animal, we still have the same issue. We still have to inspect the same. The guy or gal, this could be a guy in this particular case, got into that attic and is died in the attic. There's a way in. We got to find that out. Now, was there an opening already created by something else? And when things are usually open in an attic, unless it's a builder error or there's some kind of wind damage, a lot of times it's a bigger, stronger animal that does this, like a raccoon. We'll have situations where the raccoon will open up a hole. And they may or may not even use the space, but they've opened up some soffit, and they can do it in a couple spots on homes. Not all homes are easy to see all the soffit from the ground. Some spots you just can't see. You have to physically be on the roof. So if a homeowner is doing a walk around, sometimes they're just not going to see it because it's tucked in too far with the soffits, and that's normal. Those are called roof returns, and they can go back far enough to where you just can't see it. So we're looking for things like that. So in a situation with a dead animal, still something got in there in some way. So we got to find the opening. We got to determine, is there still something alive in here? And this guy just took advantage of that. So like, for example, say we have a possum that died in the attic. Okay, well, obviously we're taking the possum out. If it ruined a little bit of insulation, cool, we'll take that out. We'll disinfect, drop some new stuff in, good to go. But is there a current issue? because something opened this thing up, is there a current rodent issue because it's been open? That's what we need to figure out. Because what you don't want to do under any circumstances, close your attic if you have live animals up there.
Okay? That's counterintuitive.
It is. And that's, we find that a large percentage of other places, we're just going to say, do it in that reverse order. Okay. Why that becomes a completely, and it seems to make sense, close it up so nobody new can get in, or maybe you'll block the guy from coming in. Doesn't work like that. Whatever's in your attic is sleeping during the day. It's a nocturnal animal, meaning that when we're checking things out and people are up in the attic looking at things, it's most likely up there in some portion of it. Most attics, you can't access 100% of it as a person. It pinches down too tight in a lot of spots. You just get areas you can't see. You'll never see rats in an attic. They can burrow right into insulation. You're not seeing a thing. And they're sleeping during the day. So the big mistake is closing things up, because now you've taken an animal that is truly 100% predictable of coming in and out. Okay, so we'll run the scenario. So we had a female raccoon go into an attic. Okay, she's pregnant. She hasn't given birth yet. She's going to use that space until she gives birth and then after. But she's going to use that as a starting point. She's going to leave that attic nightly, most likely. She needs resources. Food and water are not waiting for her up there. She doesn't bite into water lines. There's no dripping from the AC. There's no water access. There's nothing. So she has to leave, and the routine is nightly, and that's where people hear a lot of the noise consistently at night on a daily basis. So she'll go out and do her thing, and she'll come back to her space. So if you try to close her in there during the course of the day, well, she's big and strong enough to smash out of anything.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, raccoons are big and strong enough to... We've never seen them go through a tile roof, but we haven't seen them go through an asphalt shingle roof. Okay. Had you told me that prior to doing this, I would say I don't know. That seems a little hard to believe. You got all those shingles, and then you've got half-inch wood underdecking. How's she getting through that? Well, she will sit there on that roof with her claws, which are extraordinarily sharp, and she will claw at it and claw at it and claw at it. And if it takes 3 days, a week, she'll get through if she wants to. We've seen it twice.
Wow. Well, we have got to take a quick break, Patrick. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I want to find out what's going on with Mama and her babies right after the break. So we'll be right back after this.
Hi, this is Jenny Moorhead with Cornerstone Coastal Properties, and you're listening to the Royal Palmcast.
Hi, Nelson Taylor here with LSI Companies, and you're listening to the Royal Palmcast.
Hi, I'm Laura Ramos, Director of Membership, and you're listening to the Royal Palmcast.
Education, you need it, we've got it. I'm Angela Foster, Director of Education at Royal Palm Coast Realtor Association. If you're a realtor in Southwest Florida, the Royal Palm Coast Realtor Association has the classes, courses, workshops, and webinars you need to stay at the top of your game and keep your license current. Looking to bill your continuing education hours? We offer core law and code of ethics classes to fulfill your CE requirement, along with many other courses to fulfill your requirements for specialty credits. Want to learn the ins and outs of the specific market you serve? Our A-Series provides an in-depth look at Cape Coral and Fort Myers with all the right experts to fill you in. Our Contract Series is a 5-session course on listing agreements, FAR bar contracts, timelines, and more. It doesn't end there. Classes like how to stay out of real estate jail, negotiating skills, listing tips, conflict resolution, and many more keep realtors in Lee County up to speed with the latest information. Many of our classes are free to members, and some are open to non-members. If you're a real estate professional who's interested in working in the Southwest Florida market, we've got you covered. For more information, visit our website at rpcra.org or email education@rpcra.org.
You buy insurance for your car and for your home. Why not for your business? Hi, I'm Kevin Besser, your Director of Public Policy. RPAC is the political arm of the Realtor Association, advocating for realtors and issues important for homeowners. In other words, insurance for your business. We need your help and support to protect your business and the rights of property owners. All it takes is $20 to insure your business and to protect the rights of homeowners. For more information or how to invest, please contact me at kevin@rpcra.org.
are back on the Royal Palmcast. I'm Jim Sandville, along with Jerry Johnson.
That's me.
Hi, Jerry.
Hi, Jim.
And our guest today, his name is Patrick Gibson, and he has got a pretty cool job. He's an animal remover. He removes unwanted critters from homes, businesses, you name it. He works with all the real estate management companies here in Southwest Florida, a lot of realtors, and many of them know him well. In fact, he is so well known, he doesn't have time to be even more well known. So he's a busy, busy guy. But he was in the middle of a story when we left for the break of a mama raccoon up in the attic, and kind of going through the process of how you mitigate such a problem. So mama's up there with her baby. She's going out nightly for some food and water. And what's your plan of attack on this, Patrick?
Okay, so at that point there, we've done the inspection. We can see that something's broken in. We don't know exactly what at that point, but it's something. And it's when it's something that's pushed through soffit, it's usually going to be a raccoon. It could be other bigger things. The trapping's not going to change. That part stays the same. Again, back to technique of figuring out what works and what doesn't for bait. I've seen things all over the map with that. I've physically seen people put marshmallows.
I hear peanut butter.
Inside no. traps. We've seen peanut butter. The key to animals is actually very simple. It's smell. Does what you're using have an interesting smell to them? Visuals are good. Smell is better because their sense of smell is dynamic.
I'm thinking tuna.
So tuna can work good, but now you're going to attract other things you don't necessarily want. So you want targeted foods. So it can work good. Your downside with something that smelly, they can decompose that fast. It can smell horrific within 24 hours, right?
Yeah.
So what I find that works extraordinarily well, back to our raccoon example for instance, is going to be barbecued Vienna sausage.
Okay? Really?
And a couple of reasons for that. The barbecue sauce is the trigger. That's our smell. That's going to waft everywhere. That's where she's going to pick up on that smell from sometimes an eighth of a mile from where I can place it. Okay. The big mistake, the big rookie mistakes I see from homeowners doing this or from supposedly paid professionals is they'll take a trap and they'll put it directly in the attic. Okay. Huge mistake.
Really?
You never want to put a live trap for a raccoon in an attic.
I tried that for a duck.
Yeah.
That didn't work either.
No, they don't like that. Ducks are, you can't trap those. Those are tricky. But it's, it's always worth trying to see that you can't.
Yeah.
Anyways, right?
So where do you put the trap?
So the trap will, let me go why you don't put it in the attic.
Because
instinctually, that's the first thing people want to do. So so say you've got it up there. Your gal is going to go to your bait, if you're using the right bait. It's going to go to it. First thing she's going to do is pull everything she can into that trap. Okay, the problem you have with that is you're setting it in an area where you could have cable lines, telephone, you could have insulation everywhere. She's going to pull all that stuff in. When you buy an over-the-counter trap, like a have-a-hard trap, like you might see at Lowe's or Home Depot, they have very big openings in the traps. You can pull a lot of material in there really fast.
So she's doing this to nest?
She's doing this because that's an instinctual thing. Pull everything in.
Okay? Really?
So she can do a lot of damage quick. Now, she realizes that doesn't work. Well, I'm going to start spraying urine all over the place. Okay? Kind of like a prisoner, that's feels like they're incarcerated and they're just going out of their mind and they're going to do whatever they can. She's going to use all her body functions. You don't want any of that stuff in the attic. Going number two is going to be next. You can have the exact same results, better results even, in my opinion, if you put your trap outside. Now, she has to leave, usually nightly. Sometimes, maybe it's not nightly. Maybe it could be every other night. But if you find out where she's coming in and out from, that trap can go on the ground outside. Okay? She will not miss your trap because she's got to leave. Okay, she's going to come off the house. She's going to leave to go get food or water somewhere. She's picking up on the smell of that probably as soon as she pokes her head out of the attic.
Well, aren't other animals in the meantime going in there?
It's possible.
Yeah.
You run into that. You get non-target animals. That happens. But you have no chance your attic getting ruined because you decided to put that trap
sure.
in place.
Yep.
So what was on a trap on the outside for something like that? Something like a rodent, for example, rats. That's not something that you ever want to put a trap outside for, because you're usually talking about a snap trap. Difference between the two is on a rodent, you technically can't live capture and release it. That's kind of a big no-no with the state. It's a beyond nuisance animal, and we've got enough of them, and they don't want them being released anyway.
So they are destroyed?
They're destroyed. They're that's a kill on site, euthanize on site type thing, and we have a couple animals like that which go over.
Well, how do you do that?
When it's a euthanized type animal?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, for a rodent, you have a rodent snap trap.
Snap trap.
Exactly.
Neck.
Go puts the head in, and it's an instant kill. The goal is not to make any animal suffer, no matter what it is.
Sure.
You want it to be instant. That's always the plan. So that has to go on the inside of the attic, no matter what, because your rodent can't do anything after it's dead, obviously. But on the outside, this is where people are into trouble. Now you'll start catching endangered birds. So you know you get a blue jay in there. Woodpecker finds its wing because it looks interesting. Now you've broken the neck of those things. So we try not to do things like that. So
not cool.
That type of trap goes in the inside. Now, the main reason for live trapping any animal, a possum, a raccoon, anything you want live trapped, is so you can release it somewhere else. Okay, and not release it down the street because it'll just come right back. Another rookie mistake. On raccoons, for example, we always have a 20-mile rule. If you take your raccoon, we've had raccoons track back. I think our best has been 11, 12 miles, it's tracked back to the original location. So you can't be dropping things off even remotely close. 20 miles is a rule of thumb. We haven't run into any problems with that. So we just keep that as a rule of thumb. She will come back if she has the opportunity. She's already established her spot there. So you got to do a release. And there's lots of rules that surround releases. You can't just go take it and drop it off on somebody's property, you know, somewhere. Lots of rules on that. So anyway, we want animals that we want to keep alive that we can just catch and we can do a release but not have them come back and just rehabilitate somewhere else. And we've got lots of good spots for that. It's getting tougher, though, with all the development that we're getting in the area. But there's still lots of great locations.
So like Burnt Store, that area?
Burnt Store is great.
Yeah.
You know, there's as long as you're not at Burnt Store itself, there's lots of locations prior to that, where it's overgrowth. It's what they want. It's their habitat. Lots of water access, lots of food access, lots of shelter. It's what we're looking for. The mistake is trying to drop them off. I'm not going to get into any stories of things I've seen out there, but let's just say I've seen them being dropped off by not so reputable places in neighborhoods.
Oh, boy.
Big mistake. So yeah. It's got to the animal has to be respected. It's got to be dropped off in a proper location. And you have to do your job correctly. You know, you got to take care of the homeowner, and you got to make sure the animal's protected. Mm-hmm. So that's how that part works. So anyway, you want to make sure that your animal is removed from the space, no matter what your animal is. Possum, raccoon, bat, woodpecker, Muscovy duck. You want to make sure they're off that property before you seal anything up. We don't want to take a predictable animal and make it wildly unpredictable by sealing it into a space, because it will do whatever it can to get out. Meaning it'll destroy things, it will possibly get into electrical wires, it'll destroy AC ductwork. We don't want those things. So animals removed first, then we seal things up. The big mistakes I see there are in the seal-ups. We see people that are like, oh, okay, well, it got in on the last piece of soffit, so let's take two cans of expansion foam and let's fill it full of foam. Again, big mistake. Will it fill it? Maybe. Will it fill it permanently? No. Its expansion foam falls apart very quickly out in the elements. It can be chewed through very easily. It can be clawed apart very quickly, and it makes a big, ugly mess. It's not the right way to do things. You want to do things in a permanent way the best you can. If you're missing a piece of soffit, you can replace the soffit. You can put flashing of the same color in there if you want to really strengthen things up. But you want to put something where they can't chew through it or tear it apart. Now, we have issues where we have animals that, even if you fixed it, well, another animal could come in there and do the same thing. So we've got, you know, another way around that is by putting stainless steel spikes in place. Okay, so fix your piece or pieces, wherever they've gotten in from. Look for other vulnerable spots on the house where they could do the same thing, where they can sit on the roof and the soffit is above them and they can get in. Make sure those are all secure, there's no ways in, and then add stainless steel spikes hanging down, pointing down, so when something tries to push up, they're touching the spike. It's enough to they can feel the pain. You're not hurting them. They know there's no way to get through that. Therefore, they just go away.
Mm.
And that's what we want. We're always trying to repel them the best we can. We're not trying to hurt anybody.
Yeah.
We just want them to go somewhere else.
Oh, good. By the way, if you're listening from outside of the Southwest Florida area, we referred a moment ago to Burnt Store. That is not a store that's in ruins. It is a section of Northwest Cape Coral. there is some historic significance to it. It was an ammunition store, I understand, back in the day, 100 or more years ago, and became burnt at some point. So the name stuck. So now it's a really nice neighborhood. They're building some new houses out there in Burnt Store.
Yeah, it's really booming.
Yeah, it really is. Nice communities. They have a nice marina out there. It is beautiful. You know, I've got a list of questions I compiled before you arrived here, Patrick. It's a mile long, and I can tell we're not going to get to them. But what I'm going to do is entice you to come back again, and maybe we can record a couple of shows so we can tick off the boxes here. But I think I warned you about my favorite part of the program. It's called the lightning round. Yeah, that's something you're ready to jump into.
Sure.
What we're going to do is I'll ask you some questions about your favorite things and favorite places and that kind of thing. And we really want to get to know you a little bit here. Sure. It's kind of a big deal when we do the lightning round because, and by the way, Jerry, I don't mean to spring this on you, but we've moved the secret location for the questions for the lightning round. Now these questions are written on 3x5 official game show host cards. We hide them in a the super secret location in a supra box, a lock box that we hang on a door somewhere in North Fort Myers.
I just followed the GPS coordinates you gave me. That's all.
Okay, yeah. So you weren't even sure.
3 a.m. today getting this thing.
Which municipality? Yeah, they used to be in Lehigh Acres. Yeah. So we moved them to North Fort Myers. We did a security audit is what happened.
Yeah, I know there are a lot of cows and horses.
Yeah, so, I mean, we just wanted to comply with security best practices, and so that's why we moved them to North Fort Myers. They considered Burnt Store, but... We went with North Fort Myers.
Yes,
all right, Jerry, may I please have the lightning round questions? Jerry is opening the Supra box right now. It's opening.
These are the cards, I think.
He's fumbling. Yep, there's got the cards.
It's these cards right here.
Those are the ones. All of them are there? Yeah, 3, 7, 8. Okay, got them. All right. Patrick.
Yes.
Lightning round. You ready?
Ready.
All right. What common household pet would you never own?
Oh, boy, that's a good question. What wouldn't I own?
For me, it's cats. But
well, I love cats, and I've got a Bengal cat, so can't go with that. That's awesome. Probably wouldn't own a snake, just because if it ever got loose, it would, even if it's completely harmless, people just have a visceral reaction to snakes, and they'd freak out. So snakes would be the answer.
Oh, okay. Well, Florida has lots of snakes, so yeah. Where would you live if not in Florida?
New Zealand.
Oh, I would have guessed Hawaii.
Yeah,
but.
I'd live in Auckland, New Zealand, which I've been to.
You've been to?
Numerous times. Amazing place. Yes.
That's what I've heard. Yeah. Yeah, it's just spectacular. What was your favorite subject in school?
Oh, biology, by far.
Yeah, you're a bio guy. Yeah. Wait, now, Patrick, what's your guilty pleasure, something you don't typically reveal?
Okay.
Please reveal
it. That's good. In my spare time, when I'm working in the background, I love to listen to Joe Rogan podcasts.
Oh, well, one,
podcaster.
Two, three Joe Rogan fans in the room.
There we go.
Yeah, that's very cool. All right. Now, what's your favorite restaurant to take out-of-town guests to?
It's in the Cape. It's called Point 57.
Point 57. Are you familiar with that, Jerry?
Oh, yeah. It's on Del Prado.
I'm not. Yeah. What's your specialty?
We try everything. I don't think I've had the same thing twice over there. Ah. It's they've got such an amazing menu. Their drinks are just extraordinarily well made. Great service.
How do I not know about this? Yeah, I'm there.
You're right in the middle of Del Prado.
Worth a try on that one, Jim.
I am going to go there. Okay. Now tell me about some of your favorite things, your favorite TV show.
Favorite TV show. I don't really watch a whole lot.
Your life would make a reality show, right? Are there reality shows out there about
Animal Planet?
Guys like
there are. The ones that do this type of thing, they violate every safety rule possible because it looks cool for the camera, but you would never do that in real life.
Oh, really?
So, so that doesn't work. I usually like to watch, any type of series. We kind of vote in our house, what looks good. We try to watch something as a family at night after dinner.
Yeah.
We like to have dinner together at the table and then pick something. We have to vote on it.
Yeah,
usually
nothing special.
Some kind of series.
Yeah, I also would have guessed Beverly Hillbillies because Ellie Mae loved the critters so much.
Oh, yeah. But, did she have a pet possum or something?
She did. Yeah, she loved the critters. And what's your favorite food?
Oh, favorite food. Got to go with sushi.
Nice, nice. Favorite movie.
Yeah, asking tough ones here. Gotta say, big fan of Lord of the Rings.
Lord of New Zealand.
Lord of the Rings series.
See, I would have said Guardians of the Galaxy because it features a raccoon.
That's true. Also good. We definitely love the Marvel movies.
There you go.
Lord of the Rings, pretty timeless. All the Marvel movies. We enjoyed those too.
Definitely. I think there was a raccoon on South Park too. But in any event, changing the subject here, Patrick, socks with sandals, yes or no?
No, definitely not. My gosh.
Heck to the no, huh?
Yes.
All right. What celebrity have you been told you resemble?
I don't know that I have been. No one I can think of offhand that...
Yeah?
Yeah, nobody.
Okay. Jerry?
I've got my own look.
Would you care to... He looks like an old friend of mine, but he's not well known.
It's a combination of Brad Pitt, Mel Gibson, and Burt Reynolds.
There you go.
I see the Brad Pitt, definitely.
That's right.
That's common.
All right. Now, do you do any imitations, Patrick?
No.
Not even any raccoon calls?
I bet he can do an animal sound.
Do you make animal sounds?
I don't.
You don't?
No.
Come here, raccoon.
I have recently heard a raccoon, and it's not pleasant. It's pretty frightening.
That's what I've heard. You grab the baseball bat and ready to...
It's a weird little trilling noise. So that one's hard to reproduce.
All right. Now I hold in my hand the last lightning round question, Patrick. You get one bucket list item. What is it?
One bucket list item. Well, that's a good one. My goodness. I would say being able to continue to do what I do, living here and doing what I'm doing.
I'm doing
a happy camper.
I'm doing what I enjoy. I feel like I kind of, what I do kind of found me, and it's just, there's always challenges with it, which never makes for a boring day. I can't ever think of I've had two similar days ever. It's a very physical job, so I do know that at some point you can't do this type of thing forever. It's very physical. I would say that I can continue to do this maybe for the next decade or so, and then possibly get into teaching. That would be ideal for me.
Yeah, well, biology teacher, yep. Probably, huh?
Probably.
Yeah, very cool, very cool. Hey, Patrick, I know we talked before the show, and you said you are a busy guy. We know that. You're working 7 days a week a lot of times, and you really don't need a lot more business, but if someone wanted to just touch base with you to tell you they enjoyed the program, how would they do that?
Okay, very easy. You can go to our website. It's the name of our business, professionalwildliferemoval.com. You can always get a hold of us there. That has more information about all the different animals we work with, that we deal with, and easy contact information for us.
Mm-hmm.
So professionalwildliferemoval.com.
Very cool. Very cool. And you can get in touch with us at the Royal Palmcast if you send an email to shows@rpcra.org. That's shows@rpcra.org. Jerry Johnson, thank you very much.
You're welcome. And thank you, Jim.
My pleasure. And thanks to Beata Jones, our CEO, for all of her support as well. If you would like to connect with us, as I say, just write us an email and let us know what topics you'd like us to cover, any particular guests you would like to see, and we will be more than pleased to hear from you. So until next time, I'm Jim Sandville. You've been listening to the Royal Palmcast, and I thank you very much. So long.
Thanks for listening to the Royal Palmcast. Be sure to listen again each week, share, and subscribe on your favorite podcast app or YouTube. And be sure to check out our sister podcast, Realtor Riff Rap, and our video news show, Realtor's Corner, which can be found on the Royal Palm Coast Realtor Association Facebook page and YouTube channel. For information about sponsorship opportunities for this and other RPCRA productions, email us at shows@rpcra.org. This has been a production of the Royal Palm Coast Realtor Association.